And the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the next Goal Line Club tailgate is against Nebraska, and we have a promo code once again. And again, we got to get more people here so we can talk to more folks. It was fun to interact with these folks.
Yes, for those of you from our favorite town of Breckenridge, Minnesota, standing and chatting there with you is a ton of fun. But yes, the promo code for that mid-October game, guessing it's going to be a little bit chillier. So if you want to be inside with the unlimited beverages and the wonderful food, it is. And again, for the record, we did not pick this. This is the sponsor. It's Hoodie 10 for the Nebraska game. In honor of Scott Frost's love of hooded sweatshirts, it is Hoodie 10. It's either H-O-O-D-Y 10, or you can do the other one as well, H-O-O-D-I-E 10, for $10 off at the Goal Line Club tailgate on October the 16th.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to what in the actual F did we just witness on Saturday as the Gophers have the absolute stone worst loss of the PJ Fleck era as they lose 14-10 to the Bowling Green Falcons of the Mid-American Conference. And joining us to break down what is an incredibly frustrating defeat, a lot to get into, is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, how many stinkers like that one have you been a part of in your time in the football game?
Well, I have been a part of those. It's hard to find the words, you know, frustrating doesn't begin to explain it. But I guess the only way to do it is to try and look and evaluate both from an execution standpoint, but then also a preparation and strategy standpoint, and evaluate yourself, you know, from the players on down to the coaches, and try to look at what you need to do to correct things, not just for the next game, but the next time this situation comes up.
All right. So normally we kick off with offense. I'm gonna play a little mix up here, and let's start with defense this time, because I know we're gonna
wanted to be Mr. Positive.
No, I really just want to. I know we're gonna focus a ton on the offense, because that's where a lot of criticism is very valid at this point, in my opinion. So let's just start with the Gopher defense. This is a defense that gave up 14 points on the day. In my opinion, they gave up one touchdown on a short field that didn't need to be a short field. But again, they gave that up. They gave up 170 yards through the air, 192 total. So that's only 22 yards on the ground. On 25 rushing attempts, Bowling Green amassed 0.9 yards per rush. Generally speaking, this was another good performance from the defense. I know people are going to continue to criticize my take on Joe Rossi. Fair enough. I hope I'm wrong. But you know, again, he's got this group playing well, and particularly this front seven, Ryan.
They were tremendous up front. I mean, I think that was the best game we've seen from the defensive line. They won up themselves from last week. I thought D'Angelo Carter, number 99, had his best game as a Golden Gopher, according to PFF, led the team in pressures and hurries with 5 and 4, respectively. He saw him with 2 tackles for loss. I mean, he was a monster out there. And then you also saw Thomas Rush and Boye Mafe continue to do what they've done so well here in recent weeks. So the pass rush wasn't the issue. And, you know, there were some opportunities to make plays for this team, which we can get into here in a second, that could have... No, again, they have 2 turnovers on the day as Braylon Oliver has a tremendous Peanut Tillman-esque strip at and near the goal line there to give Minnesota some life. Marin continues to play well to the disdain of many people who wanted to write him off early in his career. But I have no qualms from what I saw from the front seven, even the back four. I think, Derek, this game plan from Joe Rossi was very good. I think they executed it very well. And again, you allow Bowling Green 192 total yards. They go 2 of 14 on third down. They aren't able to rush the ball at all, which I think everybody expected coming into the game. But I think this was a very good performance from the Gopher defense, Derek.
Yeah, and I think the most encouraging thing that I saw out of the defense on Saturday was their play and in the situations where they were covering wide open space. It's something we've talked about before, even in this season, that they tended to look more comfortable when they were in run defense situations against heavier packages, you know, sort of packing it in, stopping the run. And Bowling Green is not that type of team. They play a more wide open offense. You saw on Saturday, sometimes going up to five wide. And I think that was, you know, that's part of their identity, but I think that was also a strategy, having scouted the Gophers and saying the Gophers aren't as good when they're trying to defend in space. And you didn't see that on Saturday. They were very good defending in space. And, you know, to call out one name, Ryan, you mentioned Mariano Sorimirin. I don't know that we've ever described him as flying around. He was flying around on Saturday, both run and pass. So it was good to see them defending space. It was really good to see them playing fast and instinctual on defense the whole game.
Yeah,
it's
they have a
Purdue team coming up this weekend that also wants to play in space and also legitimately can't run the football. So if you were ever going to have a precursor to Purdue, Luke, I think Bowling Green was going to be a decent sized test for that.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that Bowling Green, you know, offensively, while the Gophers kind of held them in check, you got to give them a little bit of credit offensively, because the Gophers oftentimes were in positions or had plays well defended, and they just executed a couple times. Like, you think about that pass to Sims that he caught in traffic. You know, that's going to happen. That's football. If you're us sitting here today breaking down this game, I think giving up 14 points should win you the ball game. I don't think there's any question about that, right? So I think the defense deserves some credit. Could they have played a little bit better and made a couple more plays? There are plays out there that they left on the field, Ryan.
There's two to me that stand out in particular. One is with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It's after special teams effed up again and gave them fresh downs again. And Jalen Logan Redding bats the pass at the line of scrimmage. It just seems like a nondescript play. Minnesota has a 2nd and 10. If he doesn't put his hand up, Terrell Smith or Justice Harris is still running onto 4th Street. It is the easiest pick six of either one of their lives. And it would have been a 17-14 ball game.
The reaction from Terrell Smith says it all too.
I got it in the GIF rewind, and it's wide open. I think the other one that stands out to me was, again, I think it was that pass to Sims that put them into the red zone for the first touchdown. Is Tyler Newbin just mistimes his jump? I mean, he reads it, and he's like a half step. He takes like a pro hop or something, but he doesn't jump in front of the ball. You're sitting there thinking, if that's Winfield, he steps in front of that, that's a pick, and they're going down the sidelines. But again, there were plays to be made there, but it's tough for me to kind of put a ton on there. Derek, is there any other plays that I missed? I think that fourth down one where Asezi doesn't get wide enough to keep the naked boot in, but any others that stand out to you?
Not any specific besides that. I was going to bring up the Newbin play and just remind people that if the Gophers are going to play a lot of zone coverage, and especially in passing downs, to sit back and if they're getting that type of rush out of their front four, that's certainly what they're going to do. But if they're going to sit back in zone and play coverage, I think the next evolution of this defense, whenever that happens, whether it's next week or next, you know, 5 games from now, whatever, is to have those guys on the back end playing the ball better. I'm not saying they're playing it poorly now, but it's just the next step they haven't taken. And a Tyler Newbin play you mentioned was a perfect example of it. It wasn't a particularly good throw. He did play the ball, but he was just a step late on it. And so having those guys be able to roam and find their zone pockets and read the routes is step one. But being able to read that quickly and then go back to the quarterback's eyes and play the ball, then what you're going to see happen is more interceptions. That's what we haven't seen quite yet, and what's I think they're on the cusp of. And it's you know, it was encouraging to see the wheels turning there, but but you know, it'd be nice to see him play that a little bit earlier and step in front of it.
That's a good point. And I just want to bring up too, that, you know, there was the early one that Jordan Howden got his hand on, and he had diagnosed the play well and actually played the play well, but then the ball was an errant throw, right? Where he maybe could have made a better play on that ball, but a similar situation where I'm not faulting him or anything, but that's, I think, just another example of what you're trying to get at, Derek, where, you know, you can be instinctual, be in the right play, but then also be able to play the ball without getting yourself burned. Right. So I thought that was another example there. I guess defensively, the one thing I do want to make sure we touch on, and I'm not trying to be negative, but you know, they obviously use Braylon Oliver in a lot of blitz situations. At this point, I'm getting a little concerned the guy can't break down and make a tackle. And I'm wondering if we just need to talk about that a little bit, because he had opportunities, you know, for sacks, and it's almost like he's going too fast. So Derek, from your perspective, what's he got to do, or why is he struggling to actually make the play?
Yeah, it's we've seen this before. From his name escapes me, player under the Jerry Kill era, similar, smaller, under much smaller than Braylon, undersized line. There you go. Same problem, and it's just a part of the game he has to work on. So being able to sneak up, or you know, sneak in a blitz, being able to close on a guy, that's all great, but you have to work on the part of the game of coming in under control, breaking down and making the tackle. You don't want to get caught breaking down too early, try to bat the pass down. You know, I mean, if the quarterback's out with the ball right away, that's fine. But it's something he's got to work on. You picked up on it, Luke. They seem to be playing him more in all passing situations. They like him, obviously, the threat to blitz. And then he's been, I think, better and better in pass coverage. But he's got to finish on those. And I think he's trying to use the speed, obviously, get to the quarterback. But you're going to see, especially in the Big Ten, you know, where even though the running quarterbacks aren't run first quarterbacks, let me say that again, even though the quarterbacks aren't run first quarterbacks, they are going to be able to adjust to guys coming in out of control, be able to step up in the pocket or back or shed a sack. So I don't think there's any magic answer for you, Luke, other than he's got to work on that part of his game and come in, you know, that last 5 yards, be able to close out under control.
I think the only other thing I want to note about defense here is 7 passes defended, and somehow not one of them ended up as an interception. So I was turning to a friend of the podcast here, Daniel House, in the press box, and I'm thinking to myself, one of those at least would have been returned for a touchdown if this was Iowa. 2 of them would have easily been picked off, but 7 passes defended, and they couldn't seem to come down with one. And again, I don't know if it's turnover luck. I don't know if it's just not being in the right place at the right time. Again, I think it's a lot of different things, but I mean, Oliver has to break down to tackle well, especially with, I don't think we'll see Cody Lindenberg anytime soon. You know, he was in a boot for the game. We'll see how that continues to kind of progress here, but I'm not expecting him back anytime soon. So without Josh Ani, who continues to be out with a mystery injury, without Lindenberg back in the near future, you're going to see a lot more snaps for Oliver. I think this was the game that he played the most in of the 4 so far. And with, I mean, you look at going forward here, the next 3 games for Minnesota, Purdue wants to spread you out. And then you got Nebraska and Maryland, who have very mobile quarterbacks. So I still think Oliver's going to see a lot of field, and he's got to learn how to break down and slow his momentum down. But I mean, is there anything else you guys want to touch on defensively? Again, I don't have a lot of qualms with the defense. They played more than well enough to win.
Yes.
But I mean, there's a lot of other bigger things to get into.
Yeah, definitely. I think just to close it up, yeah, I think you're right that, you know, they played a good enough game to win. There's always opportunities to improve. You know, generally speaking, I'm feeling better about this unit, but I am interested to see them against, you know, Big Ten teams when the lights are on. So it'll be an interesting progression, but I do think it is more promising than I had expected after that first Ohio State game. Again, the Goal Line Club brings us Gopher Gridiron Radio. They've been a long partner of ours, Ryan. It was very fun to be at the tailgate with you the other day. I think we got to really talk up Tony's Diner, especially for these 11 o'clock kickoffs. My 2-year-old son absolutely crushed the French toast. He was going to town.
He was having a lot of fun there. And like you said, I mean, I had a couple screwdrivers there. I thought they were delightful. I know everybody around me had some bloodies and some mimosas and different things of that nature. And like we mentioned, this is going to be a mid-October game for Minnesota's next home game off the bye week against Nebraska. I think it's a wonderful opportunity if you're thinking about coming to the game. You want to be inside for your tailgate. Again, we don't know what the mid-October weather is going to be. So if you want to get $10 off at the tailgate there, it is Hoodie 10 for $10 off. But if you should just become a member, Luke. I mean, it 100% of your tax-deductible donation goes strictly to the Gopher football team. Seems like a pretty easy idea to me, Luke.
All right, Ryan, I'm going to give you a choice here. Do you want to go offense or special teams? I can't decide which of these is actually going to make you more frustrated. So I'm just going to give you the choice.
Let's do special teams first, because offense is going to take us into a very, very long discussion about.
It could be a deep dive. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk special teams on the day. Ryan, Derek, not a good day for the special teams, whether it was another missed field goal, punting that wasn't exactly great, punt receiving, which was frustrating, numerous penalties. I don't even know where we need to start, probably on the penalties, because that's kind of stuff that to me just boils down to it's coaching.
Derek, why don't you go first? I always get the soapbox here.
I think I'll repeat maybe what one of our previous conversations was, which was, You can either play par for the course on special teams. They don't hurt you. They don't help you. You can have them help you the way it does for other teams like Iowa. And I'm not saying that's easy to do.
Or Michigan State last night, right?
They
like Michigan State gets that punt return for the touchdown. That's the difference in the game, right? Like, yeah.
Right. So they can be an advantage in some facet. Or they can, in the case of Saturday for the Gophers, they can hurt you. And I think in two of the special teams phases, field goal extra point block and punt return, significant breakdowns, either in penalties or in strategy. And it hurt them. In a game that's, we can talk all day long until we're blue in the face about how Bowling Green was an inferior opponent and the Gophers were a 30-point favorite, et cetera. But the bottom line is this was a one-score game for most, if not all, of the game, and you needed special teams to either help you or play par for the course, and they hurt them. So I guess the most baffling to me, we talked about it a little bit before we started recording here. I had some questions about for Ryan on the preparation of the field goal block team. So I don't understand how the two penalties occur on the field goal block, because they're not effort penalties. They're not, if a guy's coming off the edge trying to block a field goal and he happens to roll into the kicker, you might call that an effort penalty. He's trying to block the kick. It happens, it shouldn't happen, but it can happen. But there's three things you can't do on field goal block over the center. You can't line up on the center. You can't jump over a blocker, and you can't hit the center for a 1 second after he snaps the ball. The Gophers did two of those things on Saturday. So we just didn't have a clear answer on this, because we're not at practice. We're not in the meetings, et cetera. So we don't have a clear answer, but either this has happened in practice and it wasn't corrected, which I find really hard to believe, because I have to believe that Division I Power 5 college coaches, not just the special teams coach, but all of them should understand the rules. And I believe they do. So it either happened in practice and it wasn't corrected, which I don't find, or you have players doing things in the game that they're not doing in practice. It was a clear, jumping over the blocker. He clearly was trying to jump over the blocker. He didn't half jump or fall into him or any. I mean, it was a clear strategy that's illegal that he was called for. And then lining up over the center he was lined up over the center. So why they're, if we take the latter, theory, why they're doing things on Saturday that they don't do in practice during the week if somebody didn't go down with an injury and you have a guy in there that doesn't know what he's doing, I don't know how that happens.
Luke, you want anything before I stand up on the soapbox?
The only thing I just want your guys' take on this, on the, and I'm not trying to be a homer here. I'm not trying to look through my maroon and gold colored glasses on the penalty on Philip Howard for roughing the kicker. How often do you think that actually gets called? Because
every time, because the kicker got leveled to an extent.
I mean, he got leveled because the one guy pushed him, and because, like, I'm convinced
he was
that Howard,
not pushed. He was not pushed.
I'm not saying Philip Howard was pushed. I'm saying that the other guy got pushed that pushed Philip Howard into him. Like, I'm saying Philip Howard would have been able to pull up.
Well, here's my thing with that play is, like, Philip Howard was in a weird spot. Like, he was – Minnesota was trying to block the punt, but then, like, he saw Bishop McDonald, who's the one that was in front there, number 36, gets pushed to the ground in front of him. And then he just goes into, like, this big gray area where he's not sure, should he lay out for the punt? Should he slow down? So he does neither. And then he ends up getting hit by his own guy and then just absolutely rolling the punter. I mean, it's going to be called like that. Even if it's not roughing the punter and it's the 5-yard version of it, it's still going to be a first down in that instance. And that's where you just want your guys playing instinctively there. Like, you're either going 100% to block that punt, or the moment you see you're not going to get it, you're going to veer out of the way. And that's where he was just kind of caught in a gray area there. But, and that was, I mean, if you want to talk about being caught in a gray area.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Can we talk about punt return?
No, because like, there, that was,
no,
that was pathetic. I mean, it was not even just the muffed punt, right? Like, that was terrible, one.
That was a house call if he's not lined up in the parking lot. But, yeah. Luke, before I go into it, before you go into it, I know this is something that Derek wants to talk about. So, Derek, I'll give you the floor.
Well, okay, so what I saw on punt return was the Bowling Green punter on – I don't have the exact numbers on most of his punts was short. So kicked them very short. He boomed one punt. And in my opinion, the Gophers, that scared the Gopher coaching staff. So he boomed one punt over the returner's head. So on the subsequent punt returns, all of them, including the one that was muffed, they had the punt returner lining up so deep to keep everything in front of him that that's what caused the muff kick. So because they were so scared that they got one boomed over his head and they didn't want to be pinned down inside the 5-yard line, it was, in my opinion, clearly a coaching decision to back him way up an extra 10 to 15 yards and we'll just keep everything in front of you. If it drops in front of you, can't get to it, let it go. If you can get to it, run up on it and field it. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, of course, but why don't we just return? Why don't we just play football and just, yes, he bombed one over your head. It happens. Why don't we not reinvent the wheel and just do punt return?
But
just stick to what you're doing. And
here's what frustrated me about that in general. That is going to happen from time to time where you have a guy absolutely just boom one, right? That'll happen. But you got to stick to your percentages. Like, you had to have scouted that on film. And you had to know, like, he does this most of the time. Just don't get out of it. Like, don't change your philosophy on one outlier. That's the thing that absolutely drove me nuts. And then,
right. And every single other punt was very short. It wasn't that he boomed two or three or four. It was one. He got a hold of one, to your point, Luke. All the others were not only were they weren't even average. They were quite short, like 30, 35. I don't know the exact yards, but they were really short. So you're right. I'm sorry to cut you off, but the percentages thing is, well, you know, it's well heard because that was an outlier.
Yeah, definitely.
What if I told you PJ Fleck, before that final punt return, was talking to Trey Potts in the sidelines, and I think he's the one who had him line up where he did. Would that surprise you that the risk-averse coach wanted to play the risk-averse strategy part of it, that everything lands in front of him?
But see, that's where he drives me completely crazy. Like, I'm over here like shaking my fist. Like, it drives me nuts because you don't have time to be risk averse anymore. You're putting your best player with the ball in his hands back there to try and make a play. Like if he booms it over your head in there, you're kind of in a terrible position anyway. You got to take the chance of like, we're going to field this and try and score on that play. Like, just drives me crazy.
I'm with you. Well, I think a theme we're talking about here is we, you know, we meaning the team, we fear something happening. So we're going to go so far in the opposite direction that we're going to force something else to happen, something else that is as bad or worse. That's what, I mean, I guess what we're saying is maybe we line up to return the punt. And if he booms one over our head and pins us inside of the five, good job, Bowling Green punter, you got us. Like, but we're so scared of that happening that we're going to go to make some adjustment or several and go so far in the opposite direction that now we're going to cause something else to hurt us as much or more. I mean, if he had muffed it and had been recovered by Bowling Green, that's three times worse than getting pinned inside your five. You just turned it over. So you got to, you know, balancing, yes, risk aversion, but there's also risk assessment here. And, you know, let's look at what might happen to us and let's not shoot ourselves in the foot in order to, you know, avoid, you know, something that's less detrimental.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm enjoying hearing you guys work through this. For once, it's not been me.
Is this therapeutic for you?
It is. I mean, if Trey Potts just catches it, it's a house call on 17-14. I mean, he's got one guy to miss. He's got a full head of steam if he just gets it cleanly. But I don't know what else we got to see with Wenger. I mean, just alignment penalties that give fresh life. You have running into the kicker. You have Brock Anikstead returning punts, which is a joke. I mean, the one that actually rolled into the end zone there, I think it was ended up being a 77-yard punt. The ball lands like 4 yards behind him. If he just backs up 4 yards when it comes off the kid's foot, he's got 15 to 20 yards of green ahead of him to get like 10 yards. But decides, you know what? Nope, not gonna go back and get that one. Kick return continues to be Bucky Irving or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Missed the 52-yarder, which I'm not going to blame Trickett,
no,
college kicker. But, like, how many more times we got to go around and around and around with this to figure out that this is the trend and not the outlier?
Yeah, I think the thing that we just have to continue to point to is flex the one sticking by him, right? And it's ultimately on him. And I appreciate his willingness to say it falls on him when they lose in bad situations like this, you know, but it comes back to your common saying, Ryan, of I hear what you're saying, but I see what you do. Right. And Fleck has made the hard decision before, and I'm not saying that he's going to make the hard decision on a special teams coordinator here in the middle of the season. But honest to goodness, at this point, what more data do you want? Something needs to change, and that's either getting the right guys on the field, coaching them up. I don't know what it is. Because the execution piece in game, it's bad. And at the end of the day, Derek, your point is spot on that either special teams is going to help you or it's going to be a neutral. And thus far, it's not helped them. It's been a detriment to them, and it's cost them football games. And it did probably cost them this football game. And in some ways, I mean, the offense cost them the football game ultimately, but the special teams definitely contributed to that as well. It's once again time for Gopher Math. This, again, is brought to you by Ayers Rock Planning at ayersrockplanning.com. Once again, if you need a tax professional and you're sick of someone just filling in boxes, your taxes are an important job. Hire Ayers Rock Planning to make sure that they reduce your taxes and risk over generations. Ryan, as someone like yourself that has to cut pretty big checks to the IRS, how important is it to have a tax preparation firm that actually makes sure that they come with a plan to you to help you save money?
It's immensely important. Myself, as technically a small business owner, at my own LLC here, it's incredibly important. I want to make sure that I'm getting the most bang for my buck. I want to make sure that I'm not paying up the wazoo in taxes. And that's where people like Ayers Rockbland can definitely come in, give you an individualized opportunity to make sure that you can keep the most amount of money in that wallet of yours. And Luke, if people want to learn more about them, how do they find them?
They go to ayersrockplanning.com. All right, Ryan. So for the Gopher Math question, once again, have your phones out, get your Google machine ready, because if you win and you tweet at Gopher Radio, at Ryan Burns MN, and at Ayers Rock Plans, you have a chance to win 2 weeks or 2 months. Of Gopher Illustrated access behind the paywall. All right, here we go. The greatest of these numbers: conference championships won by the Gophers. Weeks the Gophers have been ranked number one in the AP poll, and the number of Gophers drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. Again, it's the greatest of those three numbers. If you win, 2 months of GI. All right. How do we start with offense? Let's start with, what was the philosophy going into this game? What was the game plan that we saw executed, and then we can get down to actual execution. So what do you think the game plan was going into this game, Derek?
I think it was the same game plan they used in the Miami of Ohio game for the most part. I don't know, you know, we don't have to spend long on it, because I think most of the listeners understand too that the philosophy is to run the ball, to not have to throw the ball unless it's necessary, control the clock. You are more talented than Bowling Green. Not only that, you are a good running football team against anybody, I think, or against most opponents. So that's your strength. You want to lead with that, find a way to be able to run the ball and control the clock and play defense. And I think that was the philosophy. And to go into X's and O's just briefly, and then we could talk about execution and some of the strategies as the game unfolded. But what I saw is that Minnesota pretty quickly went heavy with their six and seven offensive linemen, or six offensive linemen, seven blocker packages, because that was the one formation that that got Bowling Green to play an even box. When Minnesota used five offensive linemen and a tight end, Bowling Green was plus one in the box. So early on, you know, that chess match and sometimes those scripted plays to determine, well, how's Bowling Green or how's the opponent going to play against our various personnel and formations? They quickly determined that, hey, when we go with one or any of the jumbo packages, we're going to get Bowling Green to run an even box, because they're not going to put us in man coverage all over on the outside. So Minnesota stuck with that and running down the distances for most of the game. And I'll just start off with this and then kick it back to you, Luke. On first down, for the most part, Minnesota ran the ball and did okay. You'd like to see more explosive gains. We can talk about what Bowling Green did on defense and how Minnesota needed to adjust. But on first down, for the most part, Bowling Green did not stunt, blitz, or twist nearly as much as they did on second and third down. And for the most part, Minnesota was getting 4 to 6 yards. You'd love to have 8 yards, of course, but 4 to 6 yards on most of those to put Minnesota in a second medium.
All right, so let's just recap. So, like, I want to sit with this philosophy thing. Let's go back to the 2019 season. We broke down games against South Dakota State, Fresno State, and Georgia Southern. The Gophers win those games 28-21 against South Dakota State. They win the Fresno State game 38-35. That was a double overtime game, so that score is a little bit inflated. And then they win the Georgia Southern game on a last second drive 35-32. Ryan, can you remind me quickly, if you can, what was one of the things that we were constantly confused by in those three non-conference games against what were assumed to be fairly inferior opponents, with maybe the exception of Fresno State?
We were confused about the vanilla game plan, Luke.
Or the insistence on, like, complete only running inside zone, outside zone. Like, again and again and again, I think what ultimately this game is to me is that the strategy that one saw against what are considered to be inferior equal opponents came back and bit them, and it bit them in a really, really, really bad way.
I don't even know where to begin. It's just that I think the biggest difference between 2019 and 2021 would be, yeah, I mean, Minnesota was an inside zone, outside zone, middle zone, whatever you want to call it, team. But Shiraka's passing concepts were leaps and bounds better than what I'm seeing with Mike Sanford. I don't pretend to be the guru that Derek Burns is. But my biggest takeaway from this game isn't that Tanner Morgan sucks, even though I know all of you want him benched, played the worst game of his life. I get it. He was bad. But he didn't even have a shot for some of these. It's just it's either Tanner Morgan has to wait on 3rd and 7. He has to wait 4.5 seconds for these passing concepts to develop down the field. And he couldn't do that with how the offensive line was blocking and these corner blitzes that were getting him absolutely obliterated. Like, you got to put your guy in position to succeed here. And you know what this game kind of reminded me of passing concept wise, Derek, was the 2020 Iowa game, where it was like, you watched it back and you were like, what in the actual F is Sanford doing with these passing concepts? Because it just seems to me Minnesota's outside receivers are just running wind sprints. Like, they're just out there running and they're not the primary. I don't even know at this point who some of the primary guys were, because Bowling Green's defensive coordinator was ready for whatever Sanford threw out there. And that is inexplicable, and it cannot happen. And that's where, Derek, you mentioned the second down thing. You know, I told you guys in the pre-production meeting, Minnesota ran the ball 79% of the time on 1st and 2nd down. I mean, on 2nd down specifically, Minnesota ran 17 plays on Saturday against Bowling Green, and they achieved a whopping 41 yards. That's about 2.4, 2.5 yards per play against Bowling Green's defense. The predictability of this offense is absolutely numbing, and I don't understand. And I kind of want to have this lead into Tanner Morgan here, Luke, because Minnesota is now 2-2 in the season, yet Tanner Morgan has thrown the ball 18 times or more once in a game. So what do we think this is about? I mean, do we think it's about that Chris Ottman-Bell goes down, tweaks his ankle, doesn't come back into the game after getting it retaped, and they don't trust the receivers? Do we think it's about flex risk aversion strategy? Do we think it's that they don't trust a fourth-year starter? I mean, I have theories, but I want to be able to let you guys have the floor. So, Luke, why don't we go first with you, and then we'll kick it back to Derek.
So, looking at Tanner's stat line here, 5 of 13, 59 yards, 2 interceptions on the day. To your question, Ryan, at this point, the only thing that I can come up with is, outside of the Ohio State game, which I'm going to pull this up real quick. What was his stat line in that game? He was box score. He was 14 and 25 for 205 yards with 1 touchdown. That is the one game that he actually exceeds the 18 mark. I feel like they didn't go with nearly as a vanilla game plan. I think they're trying to hide as much stuff. I think it comes down largely to risk aversion. No one had tape on Dalen Wright, which helped them, or they had little tape on Dalen Wright. Maybe we can get into why he didn't play a lot here today, but I think generally it's this philosophy thing that sticks with PJ. You can be frustrated with Sanford and rightfully so with some of the concepts that he's throwing out. But from a philosophy perspective of how PJ wants to play football, that all stems from him. And I'm willing to say, like, hey, I got a lot of problems with PJ at this point in the way he approaches handling these football games. And the fact that he's 0-17, when trailing at half is something else that needs a change and probably is worth its own podcast episode. But generally speaking, I think it comes down to risk aversion and maybe some combination of the wide receivers. But Derek, I'll kick it to you and give you a chance.
Well, I think, I don't know if this is the exact question you asked, Ryan, but in the Miami game and the Bowling Green game, they did the same thing, which was things weren't executing in the passing game, and we can talk about what those were and why, but things weren't clicking early, and so they just pulled the plug. And so your question, I think, Ryan, is why don't they trust the passing game? I think the answer is that they don't, in these games, they don't believe they have to pass the ball to win. So I think that's where the quick trigger on shutting down the passing game for the most part comes up, which gets to back to your point about throwing the ball, which is maybe some of this is you have to work through some of these bumps and bruises and repetitions in order to smooth things out. And when you're just not throwing the ball, hardly ever, it's tough to do that. Now there are many things execution wise that went poorly, but that's, I think, in my opinion, Ryan, that's my answer in these two games. It's that I believe things weren't clicking early and the, you know, to paraphrase, the decision was, all right, we're done. We're running the ball.
And to me, Luke, to your point, I fully believe that stems from the head coach.
Yeah, 100%.
We've seen it now. We're into year five. He doesn't believe he needs to throw the ball to win games. And again, Tanner's only got 13 actual attempts. He had to scramble for quite a few others, which say Minnesota attempted 18 dropbacks. It's just like, how do you expect him to kind of get into a rhythm? And that's kind of where I go back to what made Tanner click so well in 2019. Shiraka did so well in terms of getting him involved early with these easy throws, these timing throws, the slants and the different things that as the game went on, your quarterback's got a little confidence as he's completed a few passes. But it's just when you ask him to pass, especially in this game against Bowling Green, it's third and long. Your protection up front was atrocious. Daniel Faalele and Sam Schluter should be embarrassed. Like, Sam, that cannot happen. It just cannot up front. It really can't. And that's where, again, Tanner has to take blame. I'm not trying to take blame off him. He was bad. I've talked about it, worst game of his career, but it's bigger than him. Because if this is about that, so do you both then subscribe to the theory that it's not that the coaching staff does not trust Tanner to throw the ball? You both think that they do, right?
Well, I think to Derek,
the fact that there's even hesitation, it's like, well, why is he even out there then? See what you have in somebody else. If you're that worried about your quarterback,
well,
if you don't even trust him to game manage, what are we even doing at this point?
I think the better question, Ryan, isn't so much do they trust Tanner, it's that they trust the receivers to get open, because I don't think Tanner is going to be the one that's going to throw people open per se. You know, he can scramble a little bit. He doesn't do that. He struggles with pocket presence like we saw in this game, especially when he gets rattled a little bit. This is something he struggled with big time in the 2019 season, especially in the non-conference part of the season. I remember the stunting and the stuff that South Dakota State did, and you know, that really, he struggled with that. I think ultimately it's a combination of this where receivers aren't able to get open quite like Johnson and Bateman were, and none are. They're both NFLers for a reason. I think it's more the combination that it is Tanner himself. I just don't see Tanner being the guy to like throw people open or scramble and make plays with his feet that are going to, you know, run people open.
Go for it, Derek.
Well, I think I would agree with Luke in that it, getting to the execution part, but then I do want to, Ryan, I want to not forget to comment on the strategy and route combinations. I think there's something there too, but in terms of execution on Saturday, in my opinion, it was a whack-a-mole game for the passing game. One play, a blitz isn't picked up. The next play, the blitz is picked up, but it's a bad read. And then the next play, the blitz is picked up. It's a good read, and the throw is to the open receiver, and it's a bad throw. And so it was one of those days on Saturday. And that's not talking about the schematics, which we can get to in a second. But I think I would agree with Luke in that, are they not trusting? I don't know if it's about Tanner per se, but I would, maybe a correct statement is to say they don't, when they don't see it clicking, they don't feel the need to pass, and maybe they don't trust the passing game as a whole, whether that's Tanner's not hitting his spots or the routes aren't clean or there's drop balls, or for a combination of those reasons, they have a quick trigger on abandoning pass in these type of games because they feel they don't need to rely on it.
I think we got to talk a little bit about the route combinations and how it kind of pairs with the offensive line, though. So maybe Derek, we can start with you on this, but what, you know, Ryan, you already alluded to the lengthy route, you know, how long the plays take to develop. And here's the thing that frustrates me is, like, we know the strength of this offensive line has been running the ball, and it wasn't in this specific game, but where they have struggled is those long drawn out, route combinations, right? So, you know, we all were like, oh, okay, Ohio State, you know, Dalen Wright's breaking open this first round draft pick, you know, strips Tanner or whatever. Maybe we were overlooking the fact that, hey, that's just a super long developing play. It's there, and he was going to be open, but maybe that's not going to work against Bowling Green too. So I'll kick it to you, Derek, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, a couple things here. So I think we're back to now on second and third down. So those few situations where they did throw the ball, second and third down, Bowling Green did shift to a very heavy pressure defense. So whether it was run blitz or pass blitz or some combination of a stunt twist, which gave the front seven from the Gophers offense fits at times. At times it didn't. They did pick up some of them. But at other times, it was just inconsistent across the board. So then you're back to, what strategy do you use to attack pressure in the, you know, in the passing game? And where I'm at a little bit of a loss here is, and Ryan and I talked about this at length, is how they're attacking a secondary blitz. So if you see a blitz from the linebacker position, particularly from the inside linebacker position, that's accountable to the offensive line and the running back to pick that up. So they ran a couple of those. One of them, they got two guys through a gap. So they ran both inside linebackers through a gap. You have to get the ball out on that. They took a sack on that. But most of the problems were given to them by a secondary blitz. So when you have a corner or a safety blitz, the way that you combat that, you usually are not accounting for that from the offensive line and running backs in a pass blocking situations. You have to do one of two things. You either have to throw hot off of that blitz, or you have to try and hold the ball long enough to throw the ball downfield into single coverage and penalize, you know, punish the team for leaving themselves in man coverage. So how you make that determination depends on the type of coverage that's left behind the secondary blitz. So what we saw on Saturday was, those corner crashes or nickel corner blitzes, they left cushion coverage behind it. So the player who was supposed to be defended by the blitzer, he's left with a safety deep over him. And conventional wisdom would say you throw hot off that because you have a gap in there. You got to turn and throw the ball quickly. Had they been left with tight man coverage, so press man, then you hold the ball and throw it downfield. What we didn't see, and I don't know, and Ryan, we're not sure, but what the strategy is, they do not and did not on Saturday ever throw hot off of those blitzes. So I don't know if that's a strategy from the Gopher offense, say we don't throw hot off of those type of blitzes. We want to hold the ball, try and avoid the sack, maybe scramble, maybe throw the ball downfield, or if they missed it or if they haven't repped that enough. But that really hurt them on Saturday in at least two, if not more, in crucial passing situations where Bowling Green brought a secondary blitz and there was an opportunity to throw hot behind it, and they didn't do that because of the long routes that Ryan's talking about downfield, which take too long to develop. They're defended because the safety's sitting back there, and now the blitz gets home.
Yeah, let me just make one. Sorry. We're really talking over each other today because I think largely we all are frustrated and need to get it out. So
this is the most
is
I've ever heard Luke talk on a Gopher football podcast.
Okay, I do have one more comment on this. This is the point that you make, Derek, where, you know, they either didn't have a strategy, they didn't rep. I think one point you're missing, though, is, you know, they didn't make an adjustment. Like, they should have been able to make an adjustment. It's not
It's not
like Bowling Green went and did something like crazy in the second half, totally different from the first. They continued what they did. And this is, again, a case in point. There's a reason you're 0-17 after being down at halftime. There's 100% a reason you're 0-17. And it's because you're either unwilling or too stubborn to make adjustments. I'd tell him that to his face.
I mean, here's what I'll say about the whole hot routes thing. For those of you, again, thinking this is an NFL team where the quarterback should see that and hot route to it, Tanner doesn't have the ability to do that. Tanner doesn't have the ability to do things in this offense.
It's crazy that you have to have your quarterback turn to the sideline to then relay in some sort of audible, like a fifth-year senior to do that. Like, my goodness, there are high schools that allow their senior quarterbacks to audible on the fly. Like, I don't know.
Do I think he's capable of doing it? Absolutely. But are Sanford and more so Fleck asking him to do that? No, they think they can do it better themselves. That they can see it better. And again, you look at those two corner blitzes that result in, I think one was Tanner getting absolutely decleated, eviscerated. That was initially ruled targeting, which wasn't targeting. He just got smashed. And then, another one on third down. It's just like, where are the adjustments here? I don't know. I would love to see them. If someone could show them to me on a map, I would tell you they're not on a map and that Minnesota's got some thinking to do here. But I couldn't understand for the life of me, Luke, to your point and then to Derek's point as well, these long, drawn-out passing concepts. When it's clear that Bowling Green is going to bring five, if not six, and they're going to do a bunch of stunts and twists that Minnesota's offensive line, for whatever reason, continues to struggle with, why would you not have some short, easy throws for Tanner, at least one of them? Because, again, you got the outside receivers running wind sprints to the sticks, and then they're not open because that's where the corners know they're going to go. And then these guys in the middle, it just takes too long to get there. I do not know where the adjustments were. 0-17 when losing at halftime is a damning stat. I don't know that you can really get around it. And the fact that Minnesota couldn't make it 1-16 against Bowling Green Falcons is quite something. And that's where I just want to know, Luke and Derek, what happened to the RPO game?
I don't know, like, because what happened to it was their longest completion on the day.
I mean, I think in large part that leads me into a couple other points is, I mean, the yards after catch on this team is sad. There is no, they're not the receivers aren't getting yak. They're not being schemed to get yak. You know, from talking with Daniel House, and I'm going to take it from him, we'll give him credit here. Minnesota was one of the worst teams in college football last year in yards after the catch.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman didn't play? Bateman played in a couple games, and how much of it is the receivers versus how much of it is Sanford's offense is so predicated on these contested catch winning throws, which if the offense is predicated on that, I mean, what are we even discussing here at this point?
Here, okay, Ryan, one time we asked for like poll question, not like listener questions, right? And the question, I don't know if you remember, was if you had one question that they had to answer, what would you ask Mike Sanford or Joe Rossi, right? And do you remember my question that I would ask Mike Sanford?
No.
My question for Mike Sanford was, what did you do to screw up Jordan Love, right? Because Jordan Love in 2018, okay, I'm just going to read you some numbers here real quick. He was 64% completion percentage, 8.6 yards per attempt, 32 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. All right, are you sitting down, Ryan?
I will be standing up here very shortly.
61.9%, you know, definitely a drop in 2019, his lone year with Mike Sanford. This is the one that jumps out to me big time. 20 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, right? Like, Utah State fans were not pleased with Mike Sanford. He got out. Yeah, he got an upgrade, but he got out for a reason because they weren't happy. He was already on the hot seat. And I think we have to ask ourselves, what's happened with Tanner Morgan, right? And yeah, you could say that it's, you know, a couple NFL wide receivers coming off the roster, but I think it's also you could look at it might be scheme stuff, and this doesn't fit Tanner. It doesn't fit Tanner well, or they haven't meshed. And you tried to tell me last year, you know, well, it's COVID and they didn't get the time to practice. And I'm sitting here thinking like, maybe not. I think you've gotten enough time to practice this season.
Eric, go for it.
Ryan, you're really not going to like my answer. What happened to the RPO? The RPO, well, because here's the answer for, from my perspective, the RPO is still there and it's working. They ran that, but they're not doing it as their bread and butter, like 2019. And as they did before, they did run RPO and they did run the deep crossing routes that you and Daniel were referring to. And I believe how many completions were on, did he have on Saturday? Seven or eight, did you say?
He was five.
The Tanner have.
Yeah, five.
Okay, so off the top of my head, without having the film in front of me, I'd be willing to bet three of those five were the routes you're talking about, either a straight RPO or the deep crossing route. And they worked. So one of the times they ran it, they got called for an illegal, ineligible receiver downfield.
Which that was a good
Another
call.
Time was air. Right. Another time that was also an RPO was Daniel Jackson was wide open and Tanner threw it 10 yards over his head. And I believe two or three of those five completions were those routes you're talking about. So frustratingly so, it's still there. They still use those concepts, but it's not their bread and butter. They're using some of these other concepts that you're talking about that are, you know, that we're frustrated with that aren't working. So the RPO is still there, and I believe on Saturday it would, for the most part, it worked. They didn't execute on a couple of them, you know, an incomplete pass and a penalty, but on some others they did, and it's working. But you know what you're talking about, Ryan, is just to rewind here back to 2019. What they really lived on was taking the tight end or the slot receiver and running a clearing route with them to get the safety out of the middle of the field. So they basically run a seam route or a corner route with the inside receiver. Now, the safety is going to take the first deep route. That's his job in most situations. So he has to help on a deep route. And then you run the outside, your split receiver, who in this offense is going to be well, it could be any of the three, that Chris Hoppenbell, Daniel Jackson, or Dalen Wright, and you run them on a shallow slant or a deep cross, depending on what the call is. And it's going to be in one-on-one situation because the safety's cleared out of there. So I don't see really much that's changed in the way that defenses are playing that you'd want to go away from that. Maybe there's something, we're grasping at straws here, maybe there's something they want to develop on the outside with some of these 50-50 routes. These routes that, as you alluded to, Ryan, are not conducive to yards after the catch. They're routes that you catch the ball and you're tackled, or you catch the ball and you go out of bounds. I don't know if they're trying to develop those because they see something there that they feel like they need to develop or put on film, but I don't have a good, clear answer for you.
One thing I want to note, Luke, is I got a PFF subscription and everything, and again, I got to do more research.
Can you even read these stats without breaking the terms of service? I'm all for it, but just FYI,
I'm gonna send it. That's where, like, the down the field stuff, like in 2019, Tanner Morgan in passes of 20 plus yards, and I just used in the middle of the field and on the right of the field. Okay, it's where the most frequent amount of passes from Minnesota down the field were of 20 plus yards. So in the middle and the right side of the field of 20-plus yard throws for Tanner Morgan in 2019, he was 27 of 38. That's really good, for 986 yards and 6 touchdowns with 1 pick. Whereas this year through 4 games, he's 3 of 10 on throws of 20-plus yards to the right and up the middle for 99 yards and a pick. So did Tanner Morgan suddenly just forget how to throw the ball down the field? I don't think so. I think that speaks a lot to these passing concepts that we're talking about, though. Like, that's staggering. I mean, 2019 with two NFL receivers to what Minnesota's got now, I get it. But your quarterback goes from completing like 70% of his passes down the field for gaudy stats to now he's 1 of 7 throwing to his right of 20 plus yards this year. It's just, I don't have answers. Tanner needs to play better, no doubt. And if he continues to play like this, I wonder what the ceiling is for this team and for this offense. But I'm just here to say it's not just Tanner that there's this big issue with, folks. It's not just Tanner.
I just want to make one more comment on the passing game regarding strategy. The other thing we have to consider is, you know, this idea that we don't think we need to throw the ball, so we're not going to throw the ball. And the idea there is we don't want to turn the ball over, tip ball interception or what have you. That's pretty clear. But you also don't want to be – you don't want to only throw the ball when you're in a negative game script situation. That's equally as difficult. So we're talking about not being able to develop a rhythm because you're not throwing the ball enough. And so therefore, when you do throw it, things are really out of rhythm. You know, you're getting drops, you're getting, you know, missed throws, you're getting bad reads because maybe you're not repping enough or getting enough live game reps. That's an opinion. But then also I would advocate for an increase in throwing the ball in these neutral to positive game script situations, because that's going to give you the best chance to be successful throwing the ball. We're not seeing that either.
I think they just need to throw more, period. 18 attempts or more in one of four games and you're 2-2 is unacceptable. If you were breaking in a brand new quarterback, maybe, but we're talking about a fourth year starter. And I just think for me, how you fix Tanner or how you fix the passing game in general, go to more RPO quick hitting stuff. It doesn't even have to be RPO, just quick hitting stuff early in the game to just get your quarterback in rhythm. I mean, we see them use Brevin span forward. They drag him across. He gets a 20-yard gain. You can see what Brevin can do with the ball in his hands, and they never come back to it. It's like these simple little things to try and get the quarterback going, and it's just – it's not there, Luke.
No, I think what's interesting that you bring that up, but their first possession, Tanner Morgan complete to Chris Ottman-Bell for 9 yards. Then they go with a run to Trey Potts. Then they get a first down. They got a first down with that run. And then Tanner Morgan completed Brevin Stanford for 21. And then it was like, okay, we're done now. And you know, Morgan did take a sack there on 3rd and 8. And I don't know if that's the point in time where they're like, they saw something.
On that play, they put two guys in the A gap and Morgan gets obliterated because, again, another long developing passing route concept that as he gets destroyed, the guy's just breaking open.
Yeah. Right. I say this all the time. And if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you've heard me say this all the way back to the Jerry Kill era. And I'm sorry that I always say it, but you got to find a way to fit the scheme to the players that you have. Unless you're in Iowa and you've been there for 20 years and you have a long identity, you know exactly what you're looking for, you're able to recruit to your identity, but you got to be willing to adjust in these situations. Ryan, I got one positive thing I wanted to bring up, though. I have a positive.
Let me talk negative before we go back to positive. I want to get Derek's opinion on this. You know, I said earlier, Fall, Alien, Schluter should be embarrassed. I shouldn't have said that. I apologize, but they were bad. And the offensive line is like, if Stanford is 1A, Tanner's 1B, the O-line's 1C. Because, Derek, I don't get it. I mean, you go from playing well as a unit largely for very large stretches of the Ohio State game to against Miami of Ohio, you lay an egg. And then you have your best performance of the season against what I thought was a good Colorado front seven. You were physical. And then you have that performance against Bowling Green. I don't get it. What's going wrong with the offensive line overall? But the thing I want you to touch on is I don't understand this whole O-line rotation thing. I feel like it's overcoaching at this point. Like, the only three guys who play consistently every snap are John Michael Schmitz at center, Connor Olson at guard, and Sam Schluter. They are rotating Faalele, Dunlap, and Andries, and I feel like that's not helping everything. I just feel like it's complete overcoaching at this point. Stick with your five and go forward, but what am I missing here? You're the offensive line guru.
Well, so a couple things. Three things real quickly. I think the commonality between the Miami game and the Bowling Green game that was really disappointing to see is I just didn't see the you know, the intensity or the want to be there from the Gophers offensive line. And I don't know if that's a symptom of it's tough to, you know, you're going to play these teams who are, you know, of inferior talent. You're going to have a vanilla game plan and you're disheartened by that, or you're not looking forward to slamming your head in there 60 times a game in a run. I mean, it's college football. That's what you're here for. You only get so many games. You should be able to get up for every game and, you know, take advantage of your limited opportunities. But I'm just speaking to what I saw, which is a little bit of, you know, the effort at times was lacking, and that's disappointing to see. The second thing that you mentioned, Ryan, is particularly against Bowling Green, is when you're playing a team that likes to stunt and twist and blitz and with lighter, faster defensive front seven, which I think Bowling Green runs like a 3-3 maybe for their, and brings in a secondary player to make it seven. That's what they're going to have to do, particularly on second and third down, is try and bring pressure, you know, bring confusion, things like that. And in order to defeat that, you have to become accustomed and adjust to those twists as the game goes on. Stick with your, you know, stick with your concepts and things. And I think rotating, in my opinion, rotating guys is hurting them in that situation, because if I'm a right guard, for example, and we're running inside zone to the left, and Bowling Green comes with a certain, you name it, an ET stunt, you know, TE, whatever, you have to feel that and see that once or twice in order to, you know, it doesn't mean you can't be successful from play one, but you're better at blocking that the third time you see it than the first time you see it. Well, if you're rotating guys in and out the whole game, now, when that happens later in the game, you've got a new guy in at right guard. He hasn't seen that yet. So he's back to the first time seeing it. So in this case, I'm not saying there isn't a reason to rotate guys and that they should, you know, it's there is no advantage to that. It's a trade-off. But in this type of game, I think it hurt them because they're not able to see that. And it's a different, they're seeing these stunts for the first time every time you rotate somebody in. So I think on Saturday that hurt them. But ultimately, Ryan, you know, you have to, the third part of it is you have to execute. And I mean, it's not all on the coaches. It's not just the decision to rotate guys. These are experienced veteran guys up front. And in order to really hurt these teams that move their front seven, you have to hit them with big plays. When guys are twisting and stunting and blitzing, they're going to become gap unsound at some point. And the opportunity for a big play, they only had one on Saturday, but the opportunity for a big play goes up when guys get out of their gap and are moving all the time. And if you don't hurt them with those big plays, they're going to stick with it. And that's what they did on Saturday for the whole game.
All right, Ryan, you got any other things you want to focus on offensive wise? Otherwise, I got one. I think I got one positive out of this whole offensive experience on Saturday.
If this isn't rock bottom for PJ Fleck offensive philosophies, if this isn't rock bottom for Mike Sanford's offensive scheming and play calling and decision making, this isn't rock bottom for Tanner Morgan, it's going to be an awfully interesting October. But what's your positive, Luke?
My one positive is I talked about how they're unable or unwilling to make changes in game, right? One thing that we did see here in this game is they were willing to make a change as it pertained to the Wildcat. And I thought this was one of the positives. We saw Cole Kramer come in and take the Wildcat snaps. He took two of them. He kept both for 22 yards, one being a 19-yard touchdown. But I do think that that is going to be a positive for them going forward. He can actually throw the ball. You have to honor the fact that that exists. And holy cats, he made a great read on the touchdown.
It's almost like this has been a package now for some time that they finally decided to deploy in this game. It was funny, Luke. I know you saw it like I did. When that play happened, a lot of people mentioned the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast, and we loved you for it. But, I mean, you can see it. To me, it's not even a wildcat at this point. It's just you brought in a quarterback. You're willing to run and get hurt if need be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like when you actually have a quarterback in there, the box, instead of going to – have 10 guys in it, we'll only have 8. And then on that play, if I'm remembering specifically, Brevin Spanford and Sam Schluter opened up a great hole for Cole to run through, and he gets his first touchdown on his first collegiate carry, which is awesome to see for the Eden Prairie kid. And then it did deploy it the one other time, and they got a first down out of it. Mm-hmm. Again, having an actual passing threat out of that is monumental, even if you are just going to run the ball 90% of the time out of it. So I would love to see that package continue to go moving forward. I mean, that's what a passing threat does out of that formation.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot of different things out of it.
And I think, too, the thing to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of people will say if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback, right? I don't look at this as that. I look at this as a package thing where they're only going to run it in certain situations. And so you're not really playing two quarterbacks. You're basically playing a quarterback and a wildcat quarterback, which are really two different things, in my opinion. Even though, like Ryan, you're saying, you know, they were just willing to throw him. I liked the adjustment. I'd like to see it going forward. And I do think that they're going to see more success with it.
I'm with you. I mean, that's about the lone positive. I think Trey Potts was fine. I mean, I thought he performed well. He saw actually an explosive play.
Yeah, and I'm
on
still
the right sidelines there where he cramped up.
Yeah, sorry. I keep talking over you today. Everybody,
you're very excited to talk about a bad football team, which I don't know how I want to take that, Luke.
I don't know. Other things that I maybe would like to highlight is some positives. I still think Daniel Jackson has a bright future, and I do think Brevin Spanford has a bright future, especially in the passing game. They just have to scheme some things to get him the ball. And again, Kokeef was good. Obviously, got dinged up a little bit in this game, but he was good as well. I don't know, Derek, if you had some try to find some positives in this game.
I take it Derek doesn't have any positive. I think the only other thing
Luke, I lost you there. Could you repeat that?
I was just saying, do you have any positives coming out of this game?
Yeah, actually, one thing I want to mention, you know, on the short yardage, I agree with you, Luke. It was good to see them, you know, bringing in Cole Kramer with good success. I would really love, I'm waiting patiently for them to run play action out of short yardage situation, because I think the look is going to be there. You know, the fourth and one that they were stopped on Saturday, Bowling Green ran a cover zero blitz, which means even the safety is coming up on the blitz, which is going to leave you and should be wide open in a play action look. So looking forward to that. But I also thought I specifically wanted to look at the running backs and pass protection, because with the three man front, that becomes important. And I was impressed by both Trey Potts, but also Marquise Irving on pass pro out of the running back position. You're picking up a couple blitz right in the middle and off the edge. I know we saw some pressure and some sacks, so it's hard to believe that, you know, blitzes were picked up, but they were, and particularly out of the running back position, that was good to see.
I think the only thing I'd note is the interesting wide receiver rotation that's going on. Now, Daniel Jackson led the team in snap percentage. I think he played like 92% of the snaps, but Michael Brown Stevens plays 91% of the snaps, where Dalen Wright only played around 40. I need to see it here with the staff and their love of Michael Brown Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
Like he
was open. I mean, he had that one deep. Well,
throw, but that's also like a catch you'd love to see the guy make.
Yeah.
Like, but I just don't understand the love of him through four games. Like, the staff has clearly seen something in practice. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to be proven wrong, and I hope he goes out and has 125 yards and 2 scores against Purdue. But, like, playing him that many snaps, you need to start to see some production from. And I get it that Morgan pulled a Donovan McNabb and threw a ground ball to him there in the fourth quarter. But
Ryan, I have at least a theory or just a guess in that situation. I don't know if it has as much to do as with Michael Brown Stevens. No offense to the kid, but I think that the staff is at times frustrated with Dalen Wright because of his really good potential. Yes, high ceiling. I think we've seen, you know, particularly in the Ohio State game, we've seen what the kid can do, and I think he has all the potential in the world, but he does, in my opinion, have a tendency to get lackadaisical on his route running from time to time. And I think that's part of what drives the coaches crazy. And I don't think it's an effort thing that he's necessarily taking plays off, but he does have a tendency to kind of zone in and out, and on certain plays just is not crisp with his routes. And you know, you can't, this is, you know, Division I, Power 5, Big Ten football, and you got to bring it on every play. And so I think they're trying to get him to earn his way into playing 90%+ of the snaps. Whereas maybe Michael Brown, you're seeing a kid that is going to bring it on every single play effort wise. And maybe the ceiling isn't what it is with Dalen, but that's probably what they want to see. That's just a guess. I'm not at practice. I'm not in those coaches' meetings, but
I would imagine you're right. It's the whole inconsistency thing, but that's where, again, he's got a lower floor certainly, but he's also got the higher ceiling. And that's where it is interesting. Pro Football Focus, not the end all be all, not the way that Minnesota potentially grades, but he was the 20th of 21st graded Gopher on Saturday. And I think that inconsistency kind of plays to that. Even on Morgan's interception, as he got absolutely smashed, like, I don't know that Dalen Wright ever saw the ball there. If he did, he certainly played the ball horribly, yeah, as he never came back towards it until it was way too late. But I mean, Derek, to your point, you probably are right. It's just, I feel like for a guy who is out there 90% of snaps, just feels like he's running wind sprints and he's just not getting the ball. But to our point here throughout, Luke, the passing game just has to throw more.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta get yourself out of this funk, and they're in a funk. They've been in a funk for a while now, and Purdue's actually got a pretty decent defense coming up this upcoming week here, Luke.
All right, once again, time for our favorite insurance agent, Ryan. What is Bill Burns going to do for his clients?
He's going to provide them with an elite amount of service, and that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, is. His goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency out there, but to be the best possible agency that puts your needs first, providing you with the elite service that you deserve. Now, many Gopher fans have actually contacted my father and have experienced that exemplary service that they deserve. Now, he is a local independent insurance agent on the east side of the metro there in Oakdale, Minnesota, and a huge Gopher fan. So if you want a Gopher fan to help you out to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck, with whether that's your home, your auto, your commercial insurance, there's never been a better time to get a free quote. So if you want to learn more, email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com or go to insurancebyburns.com to learn more.
All right, Ryan, as you so eloquently segued for us, we'll talk a little bit about Purdue coming up, but also, you know, what we saw this week in the Big Ten. So Purdue actually got their first Big Ten victory with a 13-9 win. Did you see? Did any of you guys see that low scoring of a game out of Purdue in Illinois? I didn't.
Well, here's the thing: like Purdue's so David Bell was out, their stud receiver, he's in the concussion protocol. Their Mike Allstott 2.0 is out for next week for sure. Their other starting running back and King Doru was out. And it's like, that's a bad Illinois defense. Like, that is a bad defense. I don't really care what you try to tell me about that, but 13 points at home against Illinois is concerning to me. And I haven't rewatched that game at all, but I know there were a lot of turnovers, Luke.
All right, let's talk about some other games here, too. I think just generally kind of looking at the Big Ten West, this is Iowa's division to lose at this point, in my opinion, based on the sample size we have so far. I don't think that they're, like, incredibly impressive. You know, they only beat Colorado State, which isn't great, 24-14. They've somewhat, to an extent, for good portions of those games, played down to their opponents. I think Iowa State is drastically overrated compared to what they've put on the field, and that win is maybe a little bit more tarnished. I still think Iowa's good, and I still think it's their division to lose. But man, they're generally a team to beat. Any other games that stuck out for you guys this week?
I would tell you that, I mean, Iowa's certainly the cream of the crop through the first third of the season. I still have a lot of questions about them offensively, but it doesn't matter because their defense and special teams is so good. Now, the thing I want to say is, Graham Mertz, if you thought everybody was complaining about Tanner Morgan, I would love to present you with the day that Graham Mertz had with, I believe he threw two pick sixes, has four interceptions on the day. And through 3 weeks of the season, he's got a one touchdown to six interception. Are we sure that Graham Mertz in this Wisconsin offense, I don't know what to think about what's going on in Madison right now.
What do you think? What do you guys think will happen there? Because Wisconsin has a really good defense. They don't have the really, really good running game that they normally have, but I think they know how to run the ball. But you nailed it, Ryan. That's their Achilles, you know, right now, is maybe putting it lightly, as a quarterback. Do you guys think they make a change there? What's going to happen?
Well, I think what's funny about that whole thing is the guy that you might make a change to, Cohen, he was a starter for Notre Dame, right? Like, I don't know even what they have. But generally, I do want to bring up that tweet I think I sent both of you. Some random guy on Twitter said, this Wisconsin defense deserves so much better than Wisconsin offense. And then Inside NU, which is a Northwestern, like, is it a Bleacher Report or SB Nation account?
SB Nation.
Yeah, they tweet quoted that and said, congratulations, you've officially become Northwestern, which was just an amazing take. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what they do at quarterback. No clue.
By the way, do you know who they get next week?
Wisconsin.
Michigan.
Oh, yeah. In Michigan. Michigan was up, 20-3 on Rutgers and ends up winning only 20-13. Michigan still looks good, but man, what a terrible second half for Michigan.
But I'm telling you, I don't think this thing gets any better before it might get even worse next week. So say Graham Mertz goes out next week. There was another couple of picks. Wisconsin loses again. You're sitting at one touchdown to like eight interceptions. It gets really easy after that, or at least easier. You got Illinois, Army, Purdue, or you got to travel, or they actually get Iowa at home this year. And it's just like, is this like going to be like a David Carr syndrome thing where it's not like he's getting battered around up there? He's just making bad decisions with the football.
Well, and the irony here is that this was Wisconsin trying to get out of the game manager role at quarterback. They've been really successful having a game manager at quarterback for 20 to 25 years, and they really thought, in order to take the next step, that's the position that we have to take a step up as. And the irony is that if you had a game manager this year, you'd probably have at least one more win. But
you might have beaten Penn State. Absolutely.
Right.
But like, you look at their rushing totals against Notre Dame, like they ran 29 times for 75 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they need to win next week if they got a shot at this division, to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you also, in that instance, are going to have to beat Iowa at home. But I think just largely here in the West, boys, I think the West is not good. Like, six of the seven teams you have major warts on. Like, Wisconsin, good defense, bad offense. Minnesota, I think they have a good defense. I know Luke disagrees, but
I am still skeptical. I think they might have a good defense.
Minnesota has the capabilities to have the best offense in the Big Ten West, to me. I still think they do. Now, they obviously played their worst game, but like, Purdue doesn't scare me, especially with how injury riddled they are for next week's game. Nebraska. I'm laughing because I can't wait for that October 16th game where it's Minnesota, Nebraska after the bye week. It's going to be which special teams is more inept, Minnesota's or Nebraska's, and Nebraska's going to say, hold my beer, because that operation there is just an absolute disaster, and they lose again last night.
Do you find it
to a Michigan?
Oh, go ahead. God, I'm so bad.
You're having a day. I just wonder if and when this thing finally just snaps for Scott Frost, because they continue to lose these close games, and it's like, here we go again. It's just, I have my question marks there.
And Nebraska has had their problems, and I think there's a little bit of a sentiment of, well, maybe they're getting better in some areas, and they're getting a little bit more out of the quarterback position and passing they have. But guess what? Look at the rest of their schedule. This is it. Yeah, maybe some things are clicking, but
it's
too little, too late.
It is. It's too little too late. I mean, I think the crazy thing, well, now that Minnesota lost to Bowling Green, they certainly won't be ranked, but like they have Michigan left, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin. I mean, they have a murderer's row still to come. But then you look at like, okay, I talked about Purdue. They're fine. Like Iowa's really good. Wisconsin's got their warts. Northwestern is a disaster still. I still have large question marks about them defensively, offensively, special teams, you name it. And then you have Illinois in there. And that's where I like look at this October schedule for Minnesota coming up. You're on the road at Purdue, which Minnesota opens as an underdog this weekend. With no surprise. I think they're a 2-point underdog, the 46 over under. But then you get a bye week before you get Nebraska at home. You get Maryland at home, and then you travel to Evanston. Like, you get a bye week to prepare for what is, I think, a pretty good Nebraska defense and a mobile quarterback. I also am kind of enjoying that Minnesota in back-to-back weeks gets very mobile quarterbacks because they'll go from Adrian Martinez, who Nebraska is going to run 10 to 15 times a game, to Taulia Tagovailoa with Maryland, who everybody remembers from last year. And then you get to travel down into Evanston to take on what is going to be 400 people at that stadium that's allegedly now getting an upgrade from a high school football field in the Midwest to hopefully a Division II quality type of stadium. But I think the point I'm trying to make here is it feels like life is over. I get it. You lost to Bowling Green as a 30-point favorite. But if we're going to expect now, Luke, that Minnesota is going to go back and swing up to play up to the caliber of opponent, plus we know how many issues that Jeff Brohm has had over the years with closing out PJ Fleck. The October schedule doesn't scare me. Could I see 4-0? Absolutely. But could I see 1-3 somehow? Yes. I have no idea what to expect from this football team because the last 2 weeks are the whole crux of the thing. You completely demolished Colorado. Should have won probably 38-0. But then you come back and you lose to Bowling Green. So what Minnesota team are we going to see? I don't know. But the Big Ten West isn't very good anyway overall. Like a large majority of it's not. So there's still hope for this thing is what I'm trying to say, Luke.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think generally speaking, you know, the Gophers still have an opportunity to do well in the Big Ten. That's always looked well upon. You have an opportunity, you know, to win some rivalry games, whether that be Wisconsin, you know, Iowa. I think they're going to be a heavy underdog, you know, but then again, Iowa, you know, could play down to Minnesota's level. I'm not terribly impressed with their offense. Their defense has been super opportunistic and good on them. They've won the games and they found a way, but generally.
Yeah, like, Iowa's legit. I get it. Like,
yeah, they're legit. But they're not three tiers ahead of Minnesota. They're not Alabama, right?
No.
Like they're not unattainable.
No, but like there's, again, I wish I had Torrey Taylor on this team. Their punter is incredible. And I mean, their special teams helps them with the field position, and then their defense just eventually wears you down. I mean, they are certainly – there's chinks in the armor, but I don't know that I believe that Minnesota can expose those chinks.
Yeah,
but
it blows my mind.
Discussion for like 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, it blows my mind, though, like how good Tyler Goodson is, but yet he only ends up with 57 yards yesterday. Like, how does that happen against Colorado State?
It's almost like maybe that offensive line isn't what everybody thought it was, but you didn't hear that from me, Luke.
No. So, okay. Well,
either way, Derek, what do you think? I mean, you go from the highest of highs so far this season against Colorado.
Yeah.
You go now to the lowest of lows. You've been at the peak. We're now at the valley. I mean, what in the world do you think folks should expect here going into October?
Well, I think that outside of Ryan, I know you talk with folks, your counterparts at other Big Ten schools, and I think right or wrong, Minnesota is kind of developing this identity that they will play up or down to whatever the level of competition is. And that's good insofar as that's telling you don't underestimate Minnesota. You know, they'll play up for a big game or against a more talented opponent. They'll bring it all. And so they have what they're saying is they have the ability to play with and beat anybody on the schedule. But what they have to fix, of course, is what we've talked about for the remainder, you know, all the time we spent on this pod, which is trying to play better against inferior matchup opponents. What I would say, try to say this without sounding cliche, is I think what your hope is, or maybe your guiding light for the rest of the season for the Gophers team, is to continue getting better through the rest of the season. We've seen some Iowa teams in particular, and probably some others that you guys could you know, remind me of, that will drop a game early. And, you know, one that they should have won, either they don't have it figured out for whatever reason. And, but boy, by the time November comes around, you don't want to play Iowa late in the season, or you don't want to play Wisconsin, or
you don't want to play Northwestern.
Whoever it is. And
it's Northwestern.
There you go. So I think what your aim is here is that, you know, this is tough. It's, I think it's fair to fans to let them be as disappointed as they are, and not say, hey, this, you know, this doesn't mean anything, or that, well, no, it does. It's just tough. It does mean something. It's very disappointing. But going forward, I think the idea is to keep building on some of the things you're seeing on defense, get things clicking on offense to where you can, by the time late October rolls around into November, that you're playing with any, it still has the potential to be a fun season. Wherever the standings may fall, me personally as a fan, I'd love nothing more than to see really competitive games in those final, you know, really tough final three or four games. That if I see that, I will be encouraged, and that's the reason I watch. I want to see competitive football. I love Big Ten football, and to see the Gophers continue to improve and have some of those, you know, fun, key, important matchups late in the year, that's still there.
Ryan, let's maybe just to close out, like, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, this is a team, you know, there's an opportunity at times to improve as the season goes on, Derek. Let's look back at the 2018 Northwestern Wildcats. That was a team, and I'm not saying that Minnesota is going to do this, but what I'm saying is they lost three in a row in September. They lost to Duke, they lost to Akron, and then they lost to Michigan. They then went on to win the Big Ten West, and eventually lose to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. But there is an opportunity to improve. We've seen a PJ Fleck team improve in 2019. We go ahead, change your best, follow your mantra and change your best.
And we even saw in 2019 that, and they probably should have dropped one of those games against South Dakota State, Georgia Southern, or Fresno. And it didn't, but, you know, they came back in October and absolutely eviscerated people on the offensive and the defensive sides of the ball. Now, you don't need to go out and, I'd love for you to go out and eviscerate the next four opponents, because I think you're capable of doing it to an extent. But it's, you need to show consistency. I think that's the biggest thing I want to see, is if you told me Minnesota's consistent over their next four games, which, again, I'll remind you, they're on the road at West Lafayette this weekend. They get a bye week before they get Nebraska and Maryland at home before they travel to Evanston. Like, you are more than capable of winning all four of those games if you're consistent. If you're not consistent, we're probably looking around 2-2, maybe 1-3. So if this team can find consistency, I still think there's a large chunk of this Big Ten schedule that can be awfully fun if you're a Golden Gopher football fan.
All right. Once again, we want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, Ayers Rock Planning, the Goal Line Club, and Burns Insurance Agency. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.